Now, I want you to know that I'm struggling. And here's what I'm struggling with. I only got 3 more weeks with you guys, but I got about 50 more sermons. Somebody said, well, just do it in 3-hour blocks, and you could probably cover that. And so I have this folder, and it has every week since I've been here and what we talked about. And I kind of went through that and said, yeah, they kind of got that one. Oh, no, they didn't get that one. Maybe that should be a repeat. I don't know. But I want you to know, as we've talked about, that transformation and even progress in the spiritual life is not just an event. It's a process. And we're on a journey. And so as I looked through all those notes, I realized that some review and some additional encouragement probably would be helpful for all of us. Because I've learned a lot from you people. You don't realize. You think you've been the ones learning, but I've been the one that's learning. I got all kinds of notes about you all. Somebody said, are you going to write a kiss and tell? Well, they don't let me do that contractually until at least a year has gone by. So, just kidding. Just kidding. You guys have been so much fun. One of our flagship verses, following our renewal service, was Hebrews 12:12-13. I'd like you just to turn to that very, very quickly, just so we can just have a little review on that. You might recall that in the fall, in September, October, November, we spent all of those weeks working through some of that material to help us discover what that would be like. What does it mean to take up the practical instruction of this text, where he says, so take a fresh grip with your tired hands, strengthen those weak knees, mark out this straight path so your feet will not be weak. Even those who are lame will be able to follow. So what we attempted to do was to put some channel markers in place. I want to continue to do that. And here's my conclusion. I've decided to be kind to Lance and leave him some work to be accomplished once he arrives. Okay? I'd hate for him to show up with nothing to do. That's a pastor thing. We want him to be affirmed in all of this. One thing I do want to underscore, as I went back through that material, is that there's 4 little core values that we talked about several times, that our lives individually and corporately need to be marked by these 4 things: God-centered, word-based, prayer-saturated, and spirit-empowered. You've heard me say that more than once. Those are really 4 spiritual compass points. Or you might say those would be the pillars of a structure, 4 of them together. God-centered, word-based, prayer-saturated, spirit-empowered. Now, as I went through all of this, I was wrestling with how do we finish this chapter so that the next chapter will be fruitful. Really, really fruitful. And here's what I thought. You know, when I come back and visit Trinity in a couple years, I want you guys to have 3 services and every single one of these chairs will be filled. Okay? And I want that other building over there to you all can fill that at least twice every Sunday. I say, oh, he's a dreamer. God can do that. God can do that. And you know what? He wants to use you all to be a part of that. Am I getting the you all correct? Y'all, okay, yeah, I'm still working on that. I got one more thing to do. I got to figure out how to hang that big cluster of beads on my rearview mirror. Haven't figured out how to do that yet, but we'll work on that. But what I'd like us to do today is look at what I'm calling 4 virtues for the journey ahead. None of this will be new. None of this will be a mystery. But as I work through this, I realize these are things that I also need to review, and I want to review them with you. Every time I go through some of this material, I realize, oh, God has another piece for me to absorb, to grasp, to process, to integrate. The Christian life isn't just about that point where we tick off this thing, well, got that done, took that class, now I'm ready to go. No, it's a process. A number of years ago, Chuck Swindoll wrote a book. It's called Two Steps Forward, Three Steps Back, or for me, was it One Step Forward and Six Steps Back? Anyway, it's a process. It's a journey. And so what I'd like us to do this morning is just look at four foundational virtues that will guide us, will help us, will literally propel us. And you can see how detailed and splendid the outline is in your, with lots of blanks there for you to fill those in. Are you ready? The first one is humility. Humility. Now, I've been thinking about this business of humility for years and discovered that I don't have much. So for me to stand up and give encouragement on humility, I'm talking to me as much as sharing with you. A number of years ago, about 15 years ago, I said, Lord, help me to learn humility. And you know what? When you pray a prayer like that, God will take you seriously. What I used to think was God helping me be humble was just the fact that I was embarrassed by something. Now, that's kind of a subset, but there's not a one-to-one connection. Now, I've picked a text for this, and we're going to look at several texts this morning, but I'd like you to turn to Philippians chapter 2, which is one of the key passages that have helped me, and I just wanted to share this with you. Philippians chapter 2, either in a paper version or electronic, whatever you have with you. And I put start in verse 5 in your notes, but I'd like to start in verse 3. You know, one of the problems with getting this printed early in the week is that, you know, God keeps talking, right up till Sunday morning. And that's a good thing. This is a very intimate communication from the Apostle Paul. It literally is a thank you letter to a special group of people. And into that he weaves some incredible exhortation. Philippians chapter 2, let's start at verse 3. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Oh my goodness. He snagged us in the first phrase. Be humble. Thinking of others is better than yourselves. Don't look out for your own interests, but take an interest in others. And the reason for that, he begins to explain in verse 5. You must have the same attitude, literally the same thought processes. You must think like Jesus. And here's how Jesus thought, starting in verse 6. Though he was God, he did not think of equality as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up those divine privileges and took the humble position of a slave, born as a human being, appeared as a human form. He humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. If ever there is a snapshot, a picture of humility and what is entailed in that, this text provides that. Every time I read it, I go, man, David, you're such a schmuck. You can't do this. And I can't. And you can't either. Only in following Jesus. Folks, humility really becomes the basis for every other piece of the Christian life. Arrogance is what will suck us out of the spiritual, biblical zone. I would just underscore this thing. He doesn't say here that you're to think about Jesus. He says you're to think like Jesus. There's a difference. Some of us do think about Jesus, but we don't necessarily think like him. And in order to get a picture of that, study of the Gospels or reading the Gospel will help us understand that this is how Jesus thought. And we'll look at that in just a little bit. How do we gain this when every part of our culture says to us, you're really, really significant and you're really important. And in a sense, that's true. But it keeps hammering us with this idea that, that you're worth it. You know, they owe you. You deserve this, et cetera, et cetera. And pretty soon we go, yeah, I think I do. How do we combat that? I've discovered, and I think the psalmist has given us a great clue. You might jot there Psalm 8. Psalm 8. As David looked at the night sky, as he looked at the extent of the universe, he said, wow, that's really big. That's the place that is inhabited by God. And then he says, and who are humans that God would even notice? The last couple of days, the moon has been somewhat full. I think it was at its fullest point, maybe Thursday or Wednesday. And if you look at the moon, and you imagine that if someone were standing on the moon, could they see you here on Earth without any magnification? No. Not even close. Even perhaps with the best magnification, they couldn't see you. So when David looks at the night sky and he realizes the vastness of all of this, who am I compared to that? Now this isn't to denigrate the human species who are made in the image of God, but it is a comparison that God is great. He fills the universe. He made the universe. He operates the universe. That helps me understand I am very, 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 very small. That helps me. It doesn't mean that I'm insignificant, because God in His love and His graciousness loves me. And I sometimes go, why would He do that? And you know what? He loves you too. And to me, that is a humbling thought. Everything in your Christian walk, everything in my Christian walk depends on humility. And the fact that I have an attitude that parallels Jesus, to understand that, yes, I too need to take the position of this humble, obedient servant. Not always easy to do. But God will give the grace. You say, well, how do I do that? Well, a place that I've discovered that helps me start is to confess my arrogance and ask God to put up a little shield around me so that I will begin to discover my arrogant attitudes. Can I challenge you to do that? You will be amazed at how arrogant you really are. Okay? Now, I don't mean to be offensive, but just process this. It comes out in some really stupid ways. And I was tempted to share some of them, but I would be embarrassed and so would you. But just kind of put that little banner over your life. God, just show me the places where I'm arrogant. Subtle, but influential. Something for us to work on. I'm reading a little book. In fact, I wish I'd been further along. I just read a couple chapters last night and some this morning. Gary Thomas, the title of the book is Seeking the Face of God. It delves into some of the classic writers, St. John of the Cross and a whole host of others. And he makes this statement. I want to just share it with you. There is no true Christian spirituality without humility. And I think he nailed it. I think he nailed it. There is no true Christian spirituality without humility. That leads us to the next one. Number two, prayerfulness. Prayerfulness. Here's what I have noticed. Only the humble pray. The arrogant do not pray. Now, in a sense, everybody prays. When there's a crisis, when there's an issue, when something we cannot explain, we cannot overcome, we cannot make our way through this. Yes, even atheists will pray in a foxhole situation. But is that a pattern, or is it just the escape clause? I have found that as God has helped me to try to develop some humility, it also has developed my prayer capacity, because I know how small I am. And God, if you don't do this, it ain't going to happen. If you're dependent on me to do this, it ain't going to happen. In fact, God, you're going to be in trouble, in a sense. You better find somebody else. When pride prevails, prayer recedes. As humility prevails, then prayer will prevail. I've discovered that in my own life. And if you read the history of Israel, you also discover that. And Jesus warned them in Deuteronomy. Look, you'll get there, you say, huh, well, look what I did. And your heart, in a sense, will wander away. You'll become independent rather than dependent. And we need to understand, brothers and sisters, that all prayer is dependent. And we don't like to be dependent because we like to be independent. After all, that's a hallmark of America. But it is not a hallmark of true Christian spirituality. Now, the text that I'd like to direct you to here is over in John 15. I'm being just a little bit eclectic here, but there's a reason behind it. So I'd like you to turn to John 15 for just a bit. This is part of Jesus' special words for the 11. And I want to just help us focus here for just a little bit. Jesus says, John 15, verse 5, yes, I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who remain are those who abide. Those who truly stay connected will produce fruit. Now here's a key phrase. This is one to underline. Apart from me, you can do nothing. That's the kind of posture that helps motivate our prayer. To say, God, if you don't do this, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Follow on, verse 6. Anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch. You know, he says, this goes to the burn pile. Verse 7. But if you remain in me, and he's talking about a deep interconnected relationship. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, you will ask for anything you want and it will be granted. Right, you say. Tried that once. When your heart and God's heart are knitted together, God will do surprising things in your situation. Stuff you never thought was possible. So far out of the box, you're going to go, where did that come from? And the answer is, that came from God. You couldn't manufacture it. You couldn't script it. But there it was. But humility and prayerfulness are linked. You might jot in there, and I spent quite a bit of time on this. In Revelation chapter 3, there's the story of a church. It is a church that we know of as Laodicea. And that was a church that pretty much had it together. And they said in the conversation, we don't need anything. We're cool. We got it all together. That was the human perspective. And then into that equation comes God's perspective, and it's quite different. He uses five different adjectives to describe them. Some of you know what they are. You are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, naked. Now, does that sound like a posture of independence? Wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, naked. That sounds pretty desperate to me. Now, whose outlook are we going to believe in this? I was using graphic language to help them understand their need. In verse 18, 19, and 20 says, come back into fellowship with me. That position of humble dependence which will breed prayerfulness and attachment. Arrogance will always suffocate prayer. Always suffocate prayer. To flourish in the next chapter, prayerfulness. By the way, we have prayer gatherings here. There's one Sunday morning down the hall at 9:30. There's one down the same hall on the other side at 6 o'clock on Thursday night. And I trust that your other gatherings in your small groups are partly prayer gatherings. Number three, service. Service. In any of these texts we could have used for that, but back just a few pages to a classic example of this in John chapter 13. You all know the story. Jesus takes the towel, he takes the basin, he's just literally hours from his execution. And in that culture, the master would never wash the feet of the followers, and yet he does. John 13, verse 4. He got up from the table, takes off his coat, wraps himself with a towel, puts water in a basin, and washes the feet of the disciples. In the West, we truly do not comprehend the power of this image. The master washing the feet of the followers. It just was not done in that culture. But Jesus, in his explanation of this down further, verse 12 and 13, after washing the feet, he puts his coat back on. Do you understand what I'm doing? And the answer to that is, no way did they understand what he was doing. But he goes on to explain. You call me teacher and Lord. That's correct. I, teacher and Lord, wash your feet. Now you ought to wash each other's feet. Perhaps literally, and it's certainly figuratively. I have given you an example to follow. Do as I have done. Do as I have done. Service. Service. And you can quickly see how these virtues begin to weave together. Humility. Prayerfulness. Service. So much we can say. Basically, service is literally about love. And you've heard me define love as my willingness to give myself away for the benefit of somebody else without any thought of return. I believe that captures biblical love. But there's a fourth. And again, we have visited this. Truth. Truth. The church is God's pillar of the truth. Richard John Neuhaus said that the church is an island of truth in a sea of mendacity. And I might add to that, and the beach is rapidly eroding. Rapidly eroding. Our lives are based on the one, Jesus Christ, who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Living as Christian people, our life is a life on truth. Turn to Ephesians 4. This is, and again, this is review, but I need review, and I expect you need it too. Ephesians chapter 4, one of the great passages for the church, and one that we need constantly to be in touch with. The immature, verse 14, those who are immature like children are tossed and blown by all the new truth that comes by. The latest thing on the radio, the latest thing on the telly, the latest thing in glossy print. And they're swayed from side to side, influenced, as this translation put. They trick us with lies that are so clever they sound like the truth. That's going on all the time. If you went across your television channels or you went across your radio dial this morning, you could find dozens of those right now. Right now, it's happening. But on the other hand, here's what he says, verse 15. Instead, this is to tell us there's another quadrant. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing up in every way more and more like Christ. Now, the word speak is not in the original. I don't know why translations keep putting that in there. It literally means this. You will keep on doing truth in a loving fashion. This is where truth and love come together. Now, let me just ask you a question here. Is your life as a follower of Jesus marked by truth? Not just what passes for truth, but truth. And Pilate asked that question. And what is truth? Well, you know, depending on who you talk to, humans can define that in a variety of ways. However, truth is that which corresponds absolutely to reality. Until somebody gets a hold of it and starts to pick it apart. And if you want to know what true truth is, this is your benchmark right here. If it's oblique from this or contrary to God's word, put the brakes on. Put the brakes on. Reevaluate. I'm committing to live my life according to truth. And you know what? Sometimes that isn't always comfortable. Because sometimes the truth has a sting to it. Have you noticed that? Especially when I have to face myself. It's like, man, you know, I think I'm better than that. And the Holy Spirit says, oh, no, you're not. Oh, no, you're not. Are you going to live by truth? Or are you just going to go by window dressing? As one author says, it's sort of the cosmetology of the spiritual world. We can make it look good, but is it good? So follow Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life. So there are four virtues that I'm convinced will help Trinity Church and you move into the next chapter with enthusiasm, with energy, humility, prayerfulness, service, and truth, so that all of us become humble, prayerful servants dedicated to living according to God's truth. And the question is, where do you stand in this lineup? Would people describe you as a humble, prayerful, service-minded, truthful follower of Jesus? It begins with humility. And the ability to see ourselves not just as others might see us or as we might wish to be seen, but how does God see us? How does God see me? How does God see you? Now, just a caveat there. Don't be depressed because God loves you even with your warts. Okay? And that is the beauty of grace. It doesn't say, oh, reject, poof. No, he keeps on loving. He keeps on loving. That is a wonderful, wonderful thing.